We're here on Daf Pei Beis Amud Aleph, about 15 lines down from the top. And we're up to an analysis of the second Takon of Ezra. V'shiyu Korin B'sheni Uv'chamishi. The Gemara asks, was it in fact Ezra who established the Takona that we read the Torah publicly on Mondays and Thursdays? Vahame Karahavi Mitakna. This was instituted earlier, way before Ezra. And when was that? The Sanya, the Brisa, says that after Matan Torah at Har Sinai, Vayelchu Shloshes Yomim Bamidbar V'lo Motzu Mayim. The Pasuk in Shmos Tezvav records that Bnei Yisrael were on the way, on the road for 3 days in the wilderness, and they didn't find Mayim. Darshe Rishumos, which is a reference to those who would count the letters of the Torah, perhaps, that's usually called the Sofrim, but Darshe Rishumos refer to those who look below the surface of psukim, or words or phrases in the Torah that are stumim, that are very difficult, and to reveal their deeper meaning. Sometimes these rishumos refer to things that connect and are included in the entire Torah, and they would recite they would infer from this pasuk, Ein mayim el Torah shenemar hoy kol tzame lechu lemayim. That this verse, which records the fact that they weren't finding water, is really an allusion to something much deeper. Mayim refers to Torah. And Yeshayahu HaNavi, in this pasuk, is describing his vision of the future days after the Melchama, which is called the Great Battle of Gog Umagog, when the nations of the world would recognize that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the king of the universe, there is no other king. And then they will converge onto Yerushalayim to study the laws of the Torah. And this pasuk refers, therefore, to not a tzameh in the biological sense, but rather symbolically, just like a person who's thirsty craves for water, so too the soul of a person craves for the chachma of Torah. And therefore, Yeshayahu addresses the umal soul of the nations of the world who are thirsty at the end of days for the wisdom of Torah, that they should go up and study Torah lechu lemayim. Kevan Shaholchu Shloshes Yomim, after they went 3 days in the Midbar, following Matan Torah below Torah, and they had no access to Torah, to wisdom. Nilu, that's an important word. Nilu means they were spiritually exhausted. They were craving, they were thirsty for Torah, their souls were dried up, so to speak. Is Umdu Nevi'im Shebeinehem, and the Rambam has it that it was Moshe together with other Nevi'im, V'tiknu, and they established Lahem, Shiu Korin, that they should read the Torah on at least 3 occasions within the week, B'Shabbos. U'mafsikin b'echad b'Shabbos. There would be a break of 1 day from Shabbos until Korin, b'Sheni till Monday. So that's only a 1 day interruption, U'mafsikin. And then there's another interruption of Shlishi Revi of 2 days. So from Sheni to Chamishi, there would be no more than 2 days of a break, never the 3 day break, because we want to avoid the leus, the spiritual leus that we spoke about before. Mafsik, and they take a break of Yom Shishi, of Friday, Shu Erev Shabbos, Kidei Shalo Yolinu Shloshi Yomim Velo Torah. There will not be a 3 day interruption without Torah. And based on this price, so the Gemara raises an objection. How can you tell me that it was Ezra who established reading the Torah publicly on Mondays and Thursdays? That takana predates Ezra by a long time, back to the period of time following Matan Torah. Now, just as a on the side, Tosis raises the following objection: if they meant to guarantee that there wouldn't be 3 days without Torah, they could have equally or easily have established that the Torah be read on Shlishi and Chamishi, because then from the Kriya of Shabbos there would only be a hefsek of 2 days of Monday, of Sunday and Monday, and then from the Kriya of Tuesday there would only be a hefsek of 1 day of Wednesday, and then another hefsek of Friday. So why is it that they established the reading of the Torah, says Tosis, on Monday and Thursday, on Sheni v'Chamishi? And the answer that's offered by Tosis and other Rishonim is that since on the days of Monday and Wednesday, on Sheni v'Chamishi, there were days of Ratzon. You'll notice, for example, that we have extra Tchinos, extra Tanchumin on Mondays and Thursdays. That's certainly true for the Sfaradim. They even have Yud Gimel Midas Arachmim on Mondays and Thursdays over and over again, not like the Ashkenazim who have it once, if you have that meaning at all. But the Tanchuma explains that when Moshe Rabbeinu went up and ascended the mountain in order to receive the Luchos, we're talking about the second set of Luchos after the Chet HaEgel, he went up on a Monday and came down on a Thursday. He went up on Yom Sheni, came down on Yom Chamishi, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu offered the Ritzui and the Slichu Mechila to be Mechaper on the Chet of the Eagle. And therefore Chachamim, through the generations, established Mondays and Thursdays as days of Tainius in order to bring the people to Tshuva and Kapara. And therefore they also established that the Kriya should be Dafka on Mondays and Thursdays. And even though Moshe Rabbeinu went up a Hashkama very early, it says in the Pasuk in Shmos Lamedad Valisa Baboker, nevertheless, we don't have to be makpid that the Kriyos have to correspond and be synchronized exactly with the Hashkama of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's just Halach in the Yom. The Yom itself is a Yom of Slicha V'Kapara, and therefore on those days we want to guarantee that the people are gathered together for Tainios or for Tchinos, and those days which correspond to the days in which Moshe ascended and descended from the mountain, those are the days in which we establish the Kriyas HaTorah. The Marsha here explains that the Drosh of Abraisa was difficult. Why is it that after it says that they went 3 days and they didn't find water, it's immediately afterwards the Pasuk says, and again we're going from a Pasuk in Shmos Tezvav, Pasuk Chav Beis, to the three Pasukim later in Pasuk Chav Hei, it says Sham Samlo Chok Umishpat, which means that after this 3 day journey and they didn't find water, there HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught them parts of the Torah. And the smichus here between the lack of water and the giving of at least part of the Torah, that was the basis for this drasha, that for 3 days they went without Torah. And they were exhausted. They were dried up. They were thirsty. They were craving Torah. And all of this expressed itself in Kriyas HaTorah. In fact, the Sifri, darshaning the Pasuk, Im Tazveni Yom Yomayim Azvecha, tells us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu Timoro Lahem Eitz. Right there, if you remember, they had a tree, and the Eitz is the Eitz HaChaim, Eitz Chaim Amachzikim B'Poskim Mishlei, which is a reference to Torah. And all this expressed itself in the Takon of Moshe and his Beis Din to establish Kriyas HaTorah 3 days out of the year. There should be no lina of 3 days without Kriyas HaTorah. Now please emphasize that as far as the Takon of Moshe Rabbeinu is concerned, we're talking purely and exclusively about Torah Shebichsav, the written Torah. There's no element here of Torah Shebal Peh. It's way too early after the Torah Shebichsav is given. The Torah Shebal Peh has not yet been given. And yet, the power inherent in reading the Torah Shebichsav publicly is such that it sanctifies the individual, and each person, insofar as he's part of that Tzibur, is supplied with Torah, a Torah which will, in a sense, quench his spiritual thirst and rejuvenate his spiritual soul. So getting back to our question, how is it that we attribute this Takon of Sheni V'Chamishi to Ezra when it predates Ezra by a long, long time? And the answer is, Meikara, the original Takana was very limited, and Ezra is going to expand that Takana. Tiknu Chad Gavra Tlosa Psuki, the main emphasis here is on reading three Psukim. Apparently three Psukim forms a unit of Torah Shebichsav, of Kriya, and we find that over and over again. For example, the halacha is that within three Psukim of the end of a parasha, we don't stop in the Kriya Sattah. Three Psukim forms a unit, and this was the original Takana, referred to as the Takana Sanavim, that there should be a reading of three Psukim, and that those three Psukim should be read by one person, Inami, or alternatively, Tlosa Gavri, Tlosa Psuki, three Alios, meaning three people will come up to read. We don't know the significance yet of the number three, but certainly the unit of Torah that has to be read is three psukim, which means that each gavra, each ola would read one pasuk. But we're left with, in the framework of the original Takana of the Nevi'im, three psukim. And now we're left with the question, why? Okay, we understand three psukim forms a unit, but why three gavri in the second option here? Keneged konim ulevim v'Yisrael, meaning the matrix of Klal Yisrael, the entire constellation that makes up Klal Yisrael, is a threefold one that reflects itself in three levels. The Yisraelim on the lower end, meaning they more or less cannot enter into the Migdash freely, the Levium who could enter into the Migdash at least up to a certain point freely, and then finally to the Kohanim who are allowed to enter into the Heichal, into the Kodesh. I mean, of course, the Kohen Gadol is allowed once a year to enter into the Kodesh Kodoshim. This is the situation described here before Ezra. V'asahu, what happens with Ezra's Takana V'tikein? He established Tlosa Gavri Vasara Psuke. Again, when I say Tlosa Gavri, I don't mean that that's the breakthrough of Ezra. Perhaps what the Gemara is implying here, that it has to be a minimum of Tlosa Gavri. Now, it's this element of corresponding to the threefold division of Klal Yisrael, Konim Levi Yisrael, must, and it's an absolute requirement, be reflected in the Kriyas HaTorah. Whereas before Ezra, wasn't an absolute requirement, it was another option. But the main thrust of the Takana of Ezra was Asara Psuki, to introduce 10 Psukim, a minimum of 10 Psukim, which means that one of the three Olim is going to have to read 4 Psukim. If each of the other Olim read 3 apiece, you have 6 plus 4 is 10. So that this 10 Psukim unit is now divided into 3 Olim. And what's the significance of the 10? Keneged Asara Batlonim, these are the 10 Ksherim, those people who would take off from them Molacha in order to dedicate themselves for Tzarchei Tzibur, the needs of the community. These are elsewhere, these are called the Tuvei Ha'ir, but actually Tuvei Ha'ir might be less than 10. These are the Asara Batlonim, that's already one notch higher, and they are supported from the community chest. Now, what is the significance here of the Asara Batlonim? And perhaps one could say that Ezra added a whole new element, and perhaps two new elements, into the equation. The Takana of Kriyas HaTorah, from Ezra's perspective, is made up of an element of Tzibur. And Tzibur is represented by the number 10. In Moshe's Takana, we don't find the number 10. And when one could raise the question, and this question has been addressed throughout the centuries, what is the nature of the obligation of Kriyas HaTorah? Is it a Chovas HaTzibur of a Chovas HaYochid? Then we could suggest that before Ezra, the Takana was a Chovas Yochid. Again, whether or not that Yochid could fulfill that chova, that obligation, without a tzibur, or does he need a tzibur to facilitate his kiyum? I don't know. But certainly, clearly, after Ezra established his takana, there's an absolute requirement of tzibur. Not only that, not only requirement of tzibur in the kiyum mitzvah, implementing the mitzvah, but even in the very chovas, the chovas kriya. The chovas kriya is incumbent upon the tzibur. And why this emphasis on the tzibur? What about the yachid? And perhaps the answer lies in the number 10 here with regard to psukim. Why is it that 10 psukim, again, 10 psukim obviously reflect, as the Gemara spells it out, the Asor Bat Lanim, but in addition to that, we could say that the unit of psukim has changed here with Ezra, because until now we were talking about a unit of 3 psukim. The unit of 10 psukim is an entity, perhaps, not of Torah Shebichsav in the strict sense, but Torah Shebal Peh. Meaning that in order to read enough psukim to form some sort of unit of study, of understanding, I mean, just like, for example, Lahavdil in poetry, in prose, and in literature in general, you have breakdown into paragraphs. A paragraph is a unit of thought, which has a theme to it, an underlying common theme. In reading the Torah, there is a minimum of 10 psukim to form a study unit, a theme. Obviously, you don't want to cut down that theme prematurely, and you may have to read and embellish the Kri with more psukim until finally you get to an entire inyan. And even, for example, with regard to mitzvahs zechiras amolek, which is fulfilled through Kriyas HaTorah B'tzibur, there too you'll find a unit of 10 psukim minimum. And perhaps this could justify another takana of Ezra with regard to Kriyas HaTorah, that is Targum. Ezra introduced Targum. It's not enough to read the psukim and be sanctified and uplifted by hearing the psukim, but more than that, you need an element of Havana, of understanding. And that's where the Targum comes in. Again, today, it might be imperative, or at least, it would certainly be beneficial to have the rabbi or any other member of the congregation to explain the reading of the Torah and in the vernacular, let it be English for the English speakers, in order that there be an added variable, an added dimension of Havana Satorah, upgrading as it was the reading of the Torah Shebichsav, which is a Kiyum Shmia, to a Kiyum of Torah Shebal Peh, which is a Kiyum Havana, to understand the Torah. And that's where we need a minimum of 10 psukim to form that conceptual unit, and less than that minimum of 10 is not enough to guarantee that unit. Perhaps we can add the following, that when it comes to the Kedusha, the sanctity of the Yachid can be sanctified with this bare minimum, what we call a unit of 3 psukim reflecting Torah Shebichsav. Torah Shebichsav has the power to engender a kedusha for the yachid. But when it comes to the tzibur, Klal Yisrael, we need what's called Mesiras HaTorah. We need Torah Shebal Peh. The Makadesh, the agent that sanctifies the tzibur with regard to Torah, is Torah Shebal Peh. And since Ezra added Keneged the Asor Batlonim, the element of tzibur into the picture, therefore, the sanctification of the tzibur through Kriyas HaTorah requires an element of Torah Shebal Peh. It's Torah Shebal Peh that has the power to sanctify the tzibur. Obviously, just to add as we go on here, that the individual will be sanctified as part of the tzibur. The third takon of Ezra that was enumerated, and we discussed this yesterday, is Vidonin B'sheni Uvechamishi. There will be Batei Dinim Kvuim in every city on Mondays and Thursdays. And why are these 2 days? Dishchichi D'asu L'mikra B'sifra. And the Brisa here, the Gemara, actually indicates that this third Takana is an offshoot, standing as it were on the shoulders of the second Takana. Once there was Takana of Kriya B'sheni V'chamishi, they were able now, when the gathering of the people into the larger areas, the larger urban areas, to facilitate Kriyas HaTorah. But see, where they were already there, these were days that were appropriate for Beis Din. It means that a person would come into the city and he would accomplish two things. He would first and foremost hear Kriyas HaTorah, and at the same time he would be able to fulfill his need, if he had such a need, of coming to the Beis Din. So he went from the Beis HaKnesses to the Beis Din in order to be part of a adjudication, some sort of judicial process. Next, we have the fourth takana of Ezra, sheyu mechabsim bechamishi b'Shabbos. They should launder their clothes on Thursdays, mishum kvod haShabbos, in preparation for Shabbos. Why dafka on Thursday? Why not on Friday? And the Rosh says that the reason why Ezra was magdim this kibbutz to Yom Chamishi was because the sixth day of the week, meaning Erev Shabbos, is a day of tirda. People are so preoccupied with preparing for Shabbos, they have no time to focus on cleaning their clothes. Laundering clothes was a big deal. And the Meiri adds, in expanding this very same idea, that the takana was that they should launder their clothes on Yom Chamishi Dafka, they shouldn't wait till Friday, so that we guarantee that Friday will be free for all the various myriad of hachanos for Shabbos. The takana was to avoid Friday as a day of laundry, so that the laundry be done earlier, and that would free up Friday for all the other things. If you look in the Mishnah Berurah, he mentions the Rosh that we mentioned, namely that on Fridays people just simply don't have the free time to dedicate themselves to kibbutz. Therefore, Ezra established that they should already be dealing with the kibbutz on Thursday. I would add that this kibbutz of Yom Chamishi, which would again facilitate, according to the Rosh, total dedication on Yom Shishi for preparation for Shabbos, but this itself is also a kiyum of preparation for Shabbos. In other words, Zochras Yom HaShabbos L'Kadsho requires us to remember the Shabbos the entire week long. We don't have to go as far as Shammai, who says that already on Sunday you should be putting away your best meat, you know, any meat that you come to buy for Shabbos. We can hold like Hil B'chol Yom V'Yom, and we could rely on the fact that there'll be great food available before the end of the week. But already on Thursday, one should be occupied with Kvod Shabbos. And if there are any other elements of Kvod Shabbos, you know, purchases, etc., etc., maybe it's advisable not to delay this till Yom Shishi, if you know that Yom Shishi, Erev Shabbos, is going to be a very busy, busy day. So be magdim it earlier, and that too is a kiyum of Kvod Shabbos. We get to number five on the list, v'sheyu ochlin shum be'erev Shabbos, mishum ona. The mitzvah of ona applies from Leil Shabbos to Leil Shabbos on Friday night, and shum, the eating of garlic, is meant to facilitate that kiyum of ona, that a man should have relations with his wife on Friday night. The pasuk says, "Asher pirio yiten v'ito, v'omer Rav Yehuda v'itemer Rav Nach v'itemer Rav Kana v'itemer Rav Yochanan hameshamish mitosim erev Shabbos l'erev Shabbos." That this pasuk, which describes pirio yiten, meaning procreation, be'ito in its time, is a reference to one who has intimate relations with his wife from Friday to Friday, meaning every Friday night. Pirio yite be'ito means that he does this engagement in pirio, meaning pirio v'rivia, in its proper time, and its proper time is Leil Shabbos. And therefore, one should eat shum on Erev Shabbos. That is beneficial for intercourse, for ribui zera, and that's what we want to accomplish on Leil Shabbos. Why is it that on Leil Shabbos there's a separate mitzvah chov of ona? Rashi doesn't explain it here, but elsewhere Rashi explains in Masechta Ksuvos that this is the night of Tainug, this is the night of Shvisa and of Hanos Haguf, meaning Onik Shabbos is a very broad concept and includes within it Bia, includes within it Ona. In fact, we find that the concept of Bia is something very unique, and the Onig element is essential to this act, this engagement, and that's why the Gemara says Hamas Asik be'arayos echayev chatos shekein nene. Or the Gemara says v'nichnusu adafashos ha'osos, that even a woman, although she's passive in some sort of adultery act, nevertheless she incurs a chiv kares, a chiv misa, just as a man, despite the fact that she's passive, because she has a hana in that action. So you see that hana and oneg are concepts that are integral to bia, and perhaps because oneg, and specifically oneg Shabbos, refers to Olam Hava. I mean, the true, genuine Oneg is in the next world, Tzadikim Yoshvim, etc., etc. And that's why on Shabbos, which is Me'ein Olam Hava, when we have a taste or some connection to Olam Hava, that's when Oneg becomes so critical, and therefore Bia and Ona are specifically related to Leil Shabbos. The Rush has a remez from the Pasuk Vishamru B'nei Yisrael Sashabbos, which you'll see the Rashi Tevis if you rearrange them. I mean, if you leave out the Vav and you read Vishamru, Vishamru and you go to B'nei Yisrael Sashabbos, the first letter of each of those words, B'nei Yisrael Sashabbos, spells out Bia. And the Nebuki Yosef writes that specifically in the case of a Talmud Chacham, there is a very powerful and unique obligation of Ona on Leil Shabbos. The Meiri adds that the reason why Leil Shabbos is the time that's roi for the mitzvah of Ona is because a person should not be preoccupied during the week with thoughts and activities for Ona. Those nights should be dedicated for Esek HaTorah. And Friday night can be a night, because of the mitzvah of Onig, to dedicate yourself to Machsheves and Eshtablus Be'inyan Ona. I just want to point out, I don't believe that the Meiri is excluding the mitzvah of Ona during the week. We know that there are many situations of the mitzvah of Ona that apply Dafka during the week and not on Shabbos. But obviously every person, Chachamein of Barosho, should be thinking and weighing all the variables. We're going to soon have the Takana of Bali Karen, Shaloyu Mitsuyan, Eitzel Nisoseyem, Kitarnagolin. A person has to find the proper balance between Esek HaTorah on the one hand and the mitzvah of Ona on the other hand. And certainly in the case of younger couples and the occupation, the dedication to the mitzvah of Piri Verivya, we should not necessarily be waiting and pushing it off till Friday night. Tana Rabbanan, the Gemara in this context, with regard to Shum, the eating of garlic on Friday night, quotes a brisa, Chamisha Dvarim Nemru B'Shum. If we're talking about the eating of garlic, and again we're talking about someone who has a very healthy stomach, is there are five different elements in the eating of Shum, which recommend Shum on the top of the list for a good diet. Masbia, and so the meaning, it adds satiation, umashkin, and it warms up the body, which again is a very good thing, perhaps for the mitzvah of Ona. It is not necessarily always good to heat up the body, you know, that could upset the digestive system. Umatzil punin, and it adds a certain happiness to the face, to the countenance of an individual. Mar bezera, as we spoke about before, it adds to the, to make a person more successful in zera, meaning in having children. In fact, if you take a look in the Gemara in Nida on Daf Lamed Aleph on the pasuk Isha Ki Sazria V'Yolda Zachar, and the Gemara talks there about Isha Mazras Tchila, Rashi quotes it in his parish at the beginning of Parshas Tazria, you will see that even with regard to bonos, to young girls, this concept of hazra of zriya is meaningful. Obviously not for the sperm, but for the ovum. And the Rosh says that this statement about the recommendation of eating garlic applies even to the lady folk who are engaged in and preparing for a period of arrivia. The Brisa adds, number five, Vehore kidim shebimei not in mayayin. There's certain bugs, bacteria, and the like that could attack the intestines, and the shum is a very powerful force to detonate these negative bacteria. The Yesh Omrim and others say that even on an ethical level, there's a certain propensity, a certain power to the eating of garlic, of shum, machnis ava motzi es hakina. It expands love and reduces, diminishes jealousy. Then we're up to the fifth takon of Ezra, shetehei isha mashkemes. She wake up early, vofa, and she's baking whatever she bakes. And we have to ask ourselves, is this a daily is it responsibility the whole week long, or is it somehow related to Erev Shabbos? We'll ask the question whether or not she has a specific obligation to wake up early and in general to get involved in baking food, and perhaps the answers could be inherent in the explanation of this price for this takana. Kindesha tehei pas mitsuya la'aniya. And what we mean by pas here, says Rashi, we're talking about pas shel shakras mitsuya baboker miyad la'aniyim amachazon al psochim. We're talking about aniyim that are begging at the doors for bread early in the morning. The bread should already be baked early in the morning so that there's bread for the aniyim. You know, you get the impression almost that every lady, every homemaker was involved in baking bread almost on a regular basis. And the way Rashi has it, it's apparent that this takana of baking bread early applies the whole week long. I don't know if there were bakeries and professional bakeries, bake shops in those days. I really don't know. And it seems like the aniyim were guaranteed an ample supply of bread. Lo alechem levad yichya adam, but you need bread to live on, to sustain yourself. And the families in Israel had to take the aniyim into account. And I'm wondering to myself, how many aniyim were there? Because if there were, you know, masses, superior, you know, significant numbers of aniyim, you could begin to imagine how much the lady folk had to bake in order to guarantee A, bread for the aniyim, and B, bread for their own family members. I don't know. This is not clear to me sociologically how it worked out. The Shita Mekubetza says that there's another interpretation of this Takon of Ezra, in which the Takon applies exclusively to Yom Shishi, to Erev Shabbos, on this day of Erev Shabbos, when she's baking, not only for Shabbos, but also for the whole week long. That's when she should wake up early on Friday. And there's a double kiyum here, the kiyum, of course, of Kvod Shabbos. We start the week off with baking for Shabbos, and the overflow is for the rest of the week. Again, I don't know how they preserve the bread. Do they have freezers like we have? I don't know. But the second kiyum, the second dimension is shetei pas mitzuya la'aniyim hamachazon al psochim, so that there'll be enough bread, because she makes a massive amount of bread that would facilitate giving and divvying it up amongst the aniyim. And according to the Shita Mekubetza, this concept of extra bread is derived from the Lechem HaPonim symbolically. The Lechem HaPonim was baked on Fridays and it was replaced the following Shabbos, in other words 8 days later, on the Shulchan in the Heichal. That's a Sugyan Chagiga Chavav. And according to the Shita, that this Takon of Ezra reflects Friday baking, not any other day of the week. It's because this corresponds to the Friday baking of Lechem HaPonim. And Lechem HaPonim, again, was symbolic of bringing down the Shefa Bracha from the Shamayim for the sake of Parnosa for Klal Yisrael. And here's where the Mitzvah Tzedakah comes forth, you know, high profile, center stage. We have to make sure and guarantee that the Aniyim are supplied with bread. And this is a real musishmus for all of us, because how often when we prepare whatever we prepare, when we buy whatever we buy, do we keep in mind the aniyim? You know, the concept of caring for others is so central. You know, we just had Tisha B'Av, and one of the themes of Tisha B'Av is Avas Yisrael. Here's the Avas Yisrael in whatever I'm doing, have in mind the aniyim. You know, we have in mind the aniyim usually when we go to Davin and Shul, and they come around the aniyim and ask for the Davas. Do we have the aniyim in mind when we're back home, or we're in the stores and engaged in preparing for our own lives? Do we buy extra and prepare extra for the aniyim? And now we get to the seventh takana of Ezra, and already now, if the women folk were you know, high profile with regard to the takana of kibbutz on Erev Shabbos, perhaps even at least included according to the some of the mafarshim in the takana of shum on Erev Shabbos, we now have the women really coming forth frontal in worrying about the aniyim. And this is something that we sing from Mishlei, Eishes Chayil Miyimtza. She's always extending her arm for the aniyim. And now the tznius element of the isha, shetehei isha chogeres bisinar. And Rashi learns that she's wearing a certain kind of an undergarment around her privates, and that's going to guarantee tzniusa tznius. And perhaps what Rashi has in mind here is when he says dugmas michnasayim ktanim, what he has in mind perhaps is that when she wears the sinar, it may, again, you could have said perhaps that it means that if she bends down or something like that, she, you know, she won't expose any private parts, chas v'shalom. But I would say that even more so, maybe what Rashi has in mind here, and maybe what Ezra had in mind, is that if a woman, chas v'shalom, should have thoughts about participating in some immoral act, the fact that she has the sinar on might be, in a sense, a memory device. You know, remind yourself that that there is something called tznius, and hold back. You know, everybody needs reminders to, you know, like paltim and lash, you know, take a look at the sword. And that's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. And also, we find a shetel, a woman wears a peah, you know, covering of her hair. Maybe that too is a kind of a tznius of reminding a woman who she is, and she's, you know, she's a married woman. Chazal over and over again indicate that a woman's zechia, her zchus, since she doesn't have specifically the chovah of Talmud Torah, is tznius. That's really what defines the women. And that's the zchus of Yetzias Mitzrayim, Noshim Tzidkonios. And when we raise our daughters in the religious schools and seminaries, we have to teach them that tznius. And again, when I say tznius, that goes way beyond the way you dress and the way you cover the parts of your body that should be concealed. Way beyond that. Tznius is a profound sugya and a deep concept that's very central. It applies to men as well. It's not limited to women. But with regard to women, tznius becomes really the key and the keresh kfitzah, as we say in modern Hebrew, the jump off point for the women to play the central role that they do in Klal Yisrael. Then we have the eighth takana of Ezra, and that is, just one second, I just want to fix one thing here, if you can bear with me before we read the Gemara on. Okay, I have that fixed now. We can go on. Shetehei isha chofefes vitoveles. And we had mentioned yesterday in our introduction that we're talking about, according to Rashi, srikas harosh, combing her hair very vigorously and thoroughly in order to get out the knots or any dirt or something that might be a chatzitza between her body and the water. That's Rashi Shita. And the other Rishonim understand that we're talking not only about Srika, but as the Tosa Rosh would have it, we're talking about Chafifa as a shampoo, you know, adding water and some sort of soap agent in hot water in order to get out any knots and straighten out the hair. And all this is to guarantee Tahara b'mikvah. The Gemara has a difficulty with this Takanas Ezra Do'oraisa. Why do I need Ezra for this? I mean, the Torah itself is going to teach us, as we'll soon see in the Braisa, that Tevila to Mikvah requires the removal of any chatzitza, anything that might separate the body from the water. The Sanya we learned in the Braisa, in the parasha of Tazria, in the parasha of Taras HaMetzora, in Vayuki Yudalit, it says, V'rochatz es besoro ba'mayim. And the Braisa wants to darshan these two words as a unit, besoro ba'mayim. What does it mean, besoro ba'mayim? That his basar should touch the water. Shalo yehei dover chotzeitz bein besoro l'mayim. There should be nothing separating the basar from the water. And es besoro, es hatofel l'besoro. The es is an extra word here. It could have said v'rochatz besoro ba'mayim. That would have been fine and perfect. What's es? Es hatofel l'besoro. Everything has to be placed into the mikveh. The chi of mikveh is that there should be an absolute, complete, total tvila, which means that there cannot be any chatzitza. My nihu, what does it mean, any chatzitza? And what does it mean, something that's tofel, besoro, that should not be subject to chatzitza, to generate a chatzitza, and that's seyar. Seyar is considered tofel, besoro, and the Torah goes out of its way in this drasha to teach us that we have to be very careful that with regard to the seyar, the hair, there should be no chatzitza. So since there's an Isur Torah that should be chatzitza between the seyar and the water of the mikvah, obviously, therefore, you're going to need to do this srika to remove any of these chatzitza. So what did Ezra accomplish over here? Amri, the Gemara answers, Da'oraisa le'iyune. As far as the Torah is concerned, look carefully at the seyar, and if you can determine that there's no chatzitza, fine. And that's okay. Dilma miktar. In other words, check out any places where there might be, you know, connections between the hair, you know, kshirub, which means knots in the hair, and that the water won't be able to get through those knots. Inami mos midi mishum chatzitza. Look for something that's the lichluch, what we call some sort of even a mashu of dirt, and remove it because it could be chatzitza. However, and here we're turning to pay base on the base, we also iu comes along, Ezra v'tikein chafifa. It's not enough to do iun, to check it out, to look and be careful. No, we're not going to rely on your iun, on your bedikis. We're going to require siruk b'masrek, again, according to Rashi Shita. That's what chafifa is all about. Now let's mention a few things. According to Tos Rid, as we said before, iune would include srika, and that's a doraisa halacha, because without srika, without combing, there's no way possible that you could accomplish iune and guarantee that there are no knots in your hair. You have to comb your hair. That's an absolute requirement doraisa before Ezra. Ezra established what we call, according to Tosfos Rid, rechitza chafifa b'mayim chamim, a thorough shampooing of the hair. And then Ruki Yosef seems to agree with the approach of the Tosus Rid and Min HaTorah. He says he required Mishmush B'Seyar L'Mashesh B'Seyar to make sure there's no Chatzitza. Iyun looking was never enough on a Doraisa level. Ezra established Chafifas HaRosh, which here implies Rechitza V'Mayim Cham. Now, the next point we want to make is that since Min HaTorah there is a Chiyuv Iyun, and how far that goes, again, is a controversy amongst the Rishonim, but certainly have to be Ma'ayin to guarantee that there's no Chatzitza, then Ezra's Takana, which according to the formulation of the Braisa's Te'isha, the subject of which is the woman who goes to Mikvah, forget about the women for the time being, what about the Kohanim? After all, the Kohanim on a constant basis are eating truma, they're eating kudshim, that's what the life of the Kohen is all about. and the Kohen has to absolutely guarantee without a shadow of a doubt that he is Tahar Begufo, and therefore he's going to jump into the mikvah on a regular basis, he too will need Chafifa to guarantee that there are no Chatzitzos. And it's very interesting that the Rishonim already add the following point over here, that since and because the Kohanim are regilim on a daily basis to eat Truma, then and therefore to go into mikvah on a daily basis, on a regular basis, they are very careful to avoid chatzitzos. They didn't need and require the takon of Ezra. And others ask, well, how could it be that Nishei HaKohanim, the wives of the Kohanim, who also ate Truma, that's called Kinyan Kaspo, why did they need a takana to require chafifa, since in any event they were on a regular basis like the Kohanim, like their husbands who are Kohanim, going to the mikveh to guarantee Tara? If they're used to that, they don't need a separate takana of Ezra of chafifa. And therefore we might add that there are chatzitzos that we're talking about here, there are only midrabanan. On a deraisa level, they would not constitute chatzitzos. What does that mean? Midaraisa, a chatzitza requires rubo. But miyuto, if it's only a minority, you know, it's most of the body and the basar of the body, the flesh body, comes in direct contact with the water, then if it's a mute, then even if he's makbid, he wants to get rid of that mute, nevertheless, that would not constitute that mute a chatzitza doraisa. So, for example, you know, they'll tell women, you know, is it a chatzitza or not? Like, for example, when they knead dough, you know, do they take out their rings and so forth and so on? All that is on a derabanan level, because on a doraisa level, since it's only a mute, therefore it's not a chatzitza doraisa. And this all depends upon the sugi at the beginning of Erevin on Daf Dalet Amud Beis. So to say, therefore, that it's matzui, that it's very common, that rubo, that rove for the body should have dirt on it, and therefore there's a chatzitza on a doraisa level, that's kind of far-fetched. And therefore we needed the takon of Ezra of Chafifa to guarantee that there wouldn't be a chatzitza derabanan, which means mute, and we have to know if it's a mute makbid, mute chain of makbid, etc. Furthermore, the takana of Ezra predates the second bias, because keep in mind Ezra made these takanos during the 70-year period between Churban Bayis Rishon and Binyan Bayis Sheni, and at this point they were still in Bavel. They instituted these takanas before they came to Eretz Yisrael. They were not eating truma and kachim in Bavel, and therefore this kind of tvila and tara for truma and kachim was not a relevant issue. Ezra had to step forward with his takana for tvilas noshim, for an isha to be matayar her to baila, and therefore he made this takana for the woman. Then we get to the ninth takon of Ezra, Sheyu Rochlim Machazrin Be'ayoros Mishum Tachshite Noshim. Now, the Brisa is going to amplify and clarify exactly why we have to guarantee that these Rochlim, these peddlers that travel from town to town and knock on door to door in order to guarantee the cosmetics for the women, what we call besomim, different kinds of sweet-smelling bosem, perfumes, etc. And why is this important? Kidei shelo yizganu al ba'alehem, that women should always have access, if you will, to kishut, to beautify themselves, and therefore were not permitted to block or form any barriers for whatever financial reasons, from we have to give laissez-faire, you know, free enterprise access for the rochlim to go from city to city and to sell their bosem, their besamim, for the sake of kishut hanoshim. I just wanted to add that kishut hanoshim and bosem is a very central concept at the beginning of Ksubis in terms of all the takonas, giving a woman 12 months to prepare for the wedding, and if Chas Shalom her mother dies before the wedding, to make sure that she'll be able to postpone the wedding in order to guarantee the kishut, all sorts of heterim that apply to a kala, for example, during the first 30 days of her wedding, to allow to do kishut and perhaps push aside Trump some of the Surya Inui of Yom HaKippur. All this is included in the central concept of Kedei Shelo Yizganu Al Baalehem. And finally, we get to the 10th and perhaps the most complex of all the takonis of Ezra, and that is V'tikein Tvil Lebali Kerion, which means that a Balkeri is, let's assume for the time being, we'll come back to this point later, is enjoined from the study of Torah until he does, undergoes the process of purification of Tara. He's chayv tvila of his keri. He had an omission. Frekta Gemara, the Gemara asked Del Raisa, who this is, this tvila for Balkeri is written in the Torah itself, to siv. Again, we're talking about the parsha of Ziv of Zav, and there in that context, Vayukat Tezva Ve'ish, Ki Seitze Mimenu, Shichva Zora, Verochatz B'mayim is called Besoro, and that means that all of his basar has to go into the mikvah in order to be metairim from the tumah of Keri, of Shichva Zora. So the Gemara answers, why do I need Ezra? De'o rice on a Torah level. The requirement of Tara who lit Truma v'kodshim. It's only if a person wants to eat Truma, if he's a Kohen, or to eat Kodshim, and in the case of Shlomim, even the Bailim, the Israelim, also are allowed to eat Kodshim. They need Tefillah from Keri. Also, who? But Ezra came along, Tikein Afilu Lidivrei Torah, that a person should not study Torah until he goes to the mikveh, until tefillah b'mikveh. That was the takon of Ezra to allow him for Torah. And this is, of course, going to introduce the whole concept of Kriyat Shema. Can a person recite Kriyat Shema, which is a kiyum of Talmud Torah, before he goes to the mikveh, if he's a Balkeri? And the Rush adds that in addition to Torah, there's also included in this takonah of Ezra, you need a matir, a tara process for tefillah, which might mean that tefillah itself is a kiyum of Torah. Tefillah is primarily constructed or made up of psukim in the Torah. And the sugya in Brachos on Daf Chav Beis addresses this whole issue of whether the takon of Ezra still applies in our time. I don't know if you know Hasidim who actually go to mikvah on a daily basis before davening. And the poskim say, based on that sugya in Brachos, that lahalacha, we paskin like Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, which is called Divrei Torah Eina Mekablim Tumah, and a Balkeri is allowed to study Torah even without tefillah, and that's why so many of us are not makpid to go to the mikveh before we study Torah, even if we know we have the Tumah of Shichva Zora. And of course, the question is, Rabbi Yehuda ben Seira, who was one of the great Tanoim, that's great, but how does he have the authority to undermine the Takana of Ezra? And the Rishonim, Baliatos, and the Rush offer three different approaches. One approach is that in fact Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra never undermined the Takana of Ezra, but he insists that Ezra never made this Takana to begin with, which probably means that according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra, Ezra instituted only 9 Takanas. But the other approach, which is a little bit more familiar to us, is that Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra understood that Ezra's takana was not an absolute requirement, it was an additional kiyum to enhance one's Talmud Torah and embellish it with Tara, and Kolarotze Yavov Yivatlena, anyone who wants to be Mavatel this takana is allowed to do so. And perhaps Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra felt that this takana of Ezra was inhibiting, rather than expanding and enhancing Talmud Torah, was sort of restricting or limiting people in Talmud Torah. So he came along and he was matir. The third approach is that perhaps we can apply the principle of Ein Rov HaTzibur Yecholim Lamod Ba, that perhaps the Takon of Ezra requiring Tefillah B'Mikvah on such a regular basis for Baal Keri wood was something that most of Klal Yisrael could not, you know, uphold and sustain this takana. The Gemara uses this logic at the end of Avodah Zorah. I shouldn't say at the end of Avodah Zorah, but at the end of the sugya of Isurei Akum, you know, the Isurim like Cholav Akum, Gvinas Akum, and there with regard to Shemen Shel Goyim, which means you cannot buy oil that was manufactured by Goyim, that was the takana that never really took grasp, you know, there was never an achiza because the tzibur simply couldn't tolerate it. The Rambam in Hilchos Kriyas for Perek Dalid seems to indicate quite clearly that the takon of Ezra lo nispashta b'chol Yisrael, it never really got off the ground, it was never accepted by Klal Yisrael, and there was no koach of Rov HaTzibur Lamod, but for the Rov HaTzibur, they didn't have the koach to sustain and fulfill this takana, therefore it was betela. Betela, the Kesef Mishnah interprets to mean that it was out of use, so to speak. Not that it was ever completely nulled and void, but the Rambam does say that Nogu Kol Yisrael Likros Betorv Likros Bekriyach Makshem Bali Keren came on the Ein Divrei Torah Mekablim Tuma, clearly codifying the halacha of Rabbi Yudim and Vesey Brachos Chav Beis, and so too you'll find in Shulchan Aruch Chaim Siman Pei Ches that perhaps against the Rambam the Shulchan Aruch goes even a step further, Bitlu Takonazu, and the Magen Avraham understands that that's a full-fledged Bitul, and they had to juggle and decide, make a decision of priorities between Bitul Torah on the one end and Bitul, you know, Bittul this kium of Tara on the other hand, they felt that Bittul Talmud Torah would outweigh and trump the Bittul element of the Taras Baal Keri. Anyway, the Magen Avraham has to be read and clearly understood inside. Now I'd like to take a look at the next sugya, which introduces the Yerushalayim, the uniqueness of Yerushalayim in 10 different dinim. These are the 10 dinim, and a lot of these dinim that reflect the special nature of Yerushalayim, its special status, are d'oraisa dinim, and have to be understood within the context of parashios in the Torah. And the first three of these dinim really form, I think, a unit of da'oraisas. Perhaps the fourth and fifth also might be adjuncts and associates of the da'oraisa. I don't know. Let's go through them open-minded and see what we can get. Asara Dvarim Nemru B'Yerushalayim, number one. Ein habayis cholut ba. There's a halacha called Bote Ore Choma, which means, and this is indicated at the end of Sefer Vayikra, Perek Chaf Hei, where the Torah says, Ubote Achatzerim Asher Ein Bo Choma Saviv Al Stei Haaretz Yechoshev Geula Tielo Ubeyovel Yetze. With regard to sales of property in Eretz Yisrael, then we have halacha in Bote Ore Chatzerim. Chatzerim means that there's no Hekef Choma from the time of Yoshua ben Nun, that the mocher, the seller, has the power to be goel as bais, meaning to buy back, redeem his house from the seller, force the seller to return it to the buyer, and to be poded and pay again the difference between the original sale and how many years have passed since the sale. So let's say he sold it for 500, and let's say he sold it for 50 if we want to make life easier, and let's say 10 years went by, so now he will be poded for 40. Now this goes on until the Yovel, the 50th Jubilee year. At that point the land is reversed, I don't know what word we should use, is returned to the original sale, the sale itself is reversed. However, the Torah says that if the city is sanctified with the special kedusha of mukefes choma mimos Yoshua ben Nun, then the geula process, the rights that are granted to the mocher, are limited to 1 year to 12 months. Up until that very last day of the 12-month period since the mechira, the mocher has the right to come running in with his kesef pidyon, his geula. And after that 12-month period, the bias is chalut. It's completely irretractably and irreversibly granted into the hands of the kone. It's his possession. And Yovel doesn't have any impact. And the Torah says again, back in Vayikra Chaf Hei, V'ish ki yimkar beis moshav ir choma, beis moshav ir choma, v'haisa gulas atom shnas mimkar yomim tia gulasov him lo yigal al moloslo shanatmima v'kam habayis asher ba'ir asher lo choma litzmitus lekona and then it says, I don't have the posuk in front of me, lo yetze biyovel. I think it says Lidoros of Lo Yetze Biyovel. Now, logically, we would have applied this same halacha of Bate Ore Choma to Yushalayim, which was an Ir Mukefes Choma. However, according to this takana that we're looking at here, Yushalayim has a special din, and it's not considered like other Ore Choma. And therefore, ein habayis chalut ba, this din of chalut after 12 months, does not apply to Yerushalayim. And the mocher, therefore, can have rights to be goel his sada even beyond the 12-month period. So just to summarize here, in this first din of the 10 dinim miyuchadim of Yerushalayim, in the case of someone who sells property in Yerushalayim, the halacha is that he can be the mocher can be goel, he can be poda his field, his house, even beyond the 12 months, and there'll be a din of chazora biyovel, which means that with yovel, the field reverts back to its original owner. In Yerushalayim, the second din, v'eina mevia egla arufa. If we find a slain body equidistant between the outskirts of Yerushalayim and the outskirts of some other adjacent city, then the parsha of egla arufa, in which the zkenim go down and they do the arifas ha. Ha'egla, that process, that ritual is not implemented, is not fulfilled in the case of Yerushalayim. And in effect, the normal din of mes mitzvah, which you find a mess between the two cities, that is suspended in the case of Yerushalayim. Now, the language of the Braisa here does not clarify the following question. When there was a corpse that was close to Yerushalayim, and we measure the cities in the radius of Yerushalayim around that area, and the closest city brings the agol, the zkenim of that, of the egla, the zkenim of that close city bring the egla arufa, for the arifa segla. And do we say that if, in effect, this corpse is close to Yerushalayim, we should apply the din of Egla Rufa? Or should we say that no, there's no din of Egla Rufa at all? And the whole concept of Medida, which is the first process in the Arifa Se'egla, is suspended with regard to Yerushalayim. Even though, again, once we suspend Medida, we're excluding the logical possibility that the corpse might have been closer to the next city. So we don't know exactly what's going to be the deal in such a case if we're mafkir the entire mitzvah of Egla Rufa because of the proximity to Yerushalayim, the results, the outcome of the Medida, that this corpse is closest to Yerushalayim. The Meiri says explicitly that there is no din of Medida, which would raise the possibility that Yerushalayim is the winning candidate of closest city, because that we won't do. But it doesn't mean that the mitzvah of Egla Ruf is completely batel and nulled entirely, but rather we will do the Medida between the corpse and the other cities, and indeed there will be a kium of Arifas HaEgla, but not with regard to Yerushalayim, but with regard to that city, which is the winner of the lottery after the Medida, the measurement, it's the closest to this corpse. So basically we're looking at the situation, says the Miri, as if Yerushalayim didn't exist, and the Medida will be two of the closest cities to the corpse, and the mitzvah of Egla Rufa is not suspended because of the proximity to Yerushalayim. That's how the Meiri learns this din of Eina Mevia Egla Rufa. Keep in mind, Rabosei, that the process of the Zkenim doing the Arifa Se'egla is a process of Kapara. And in essence, what we're saying is that the city of Yerushalayim is Mufka from this mitzvah of requiring Kapara. Number three, the third din that's unique to Yerushalayim is Eina Naseis Ir Hanidachas. If Chas V'Shalom, there'll be a situation which Rov Toshvel, most of the citizens that live in Yerushalayim, have worshipped Avodah Zorah. We don't judge the city as a city in the case of Yerushalayim, but rather we judge each individual as a Yochid, and he'll be Chayev Skila if there's evidence to attest to the fact that he worshipped Avodah Zorah. But the unique parsha of Ir HaNidachas, to destroy the city, which is found in Dvarim Perek Yud Zayin, the unique process of Ir HaNidachas, which is found in Dvarim Yud Gimel, where it says in Pasuk Tzayin, Hake Take Es Yoshvei Ha'ir Ahu Lefi Chorev, Ha'ir Ahu Lefi Chorev, Hachrem Osav Es Kol Asher Bov Es Behemto Lefi Chorev Es Kol Shlola Tekabe Tzel Tok Rechov Es Sarafta Ve'esh Es Ha'ir Ves Kol Shlola Kol El Hashem Elokech Vaisa Tel Olam Lo Tibana Od. All that is suspended with regard to Yerushalayim, even if most of its members, Chas V'Shalom, would worship Avodah Zorah. All those who worship Avodah Zorah will be put to death, even if they did so in Yerushalayim, even if they're the permanent citizens of Yerushalayim. But the city itself, with all of its possessions, even the possessions of those who worshipped Avodah Zorah, although they'll be Aser Banah, but that din of Ir HaNidachas does not apply to Yerushalayim, because the Sreifa of an Ir HaNidachas applies even to the Rechush, even to the possessions of those who were guiltless of worshipping Avodah Zarah. Now we have the fourth din, V'eina Metama B'negoyim. Again, we haven't gotten into the reasoning of each one of these ten yet, and that's what we're going to have to come back to. But it means that a house in Yerushalayim is not subject to the Tumah of Nigei Batim. The Tumah of Nigei Batim, which is formulated by the Torah Vayikra Perek Yudalid, which requires that if the Kohen recognizes, identifies the Negoim on the Ksolim, on the walls of the house, as those Negoim that have the Simoni Tumah, then we have to remove each of these stones where there's a nega, and if the nega again reappears, then we're going to have to do what's called nitutz on the entire bias, completely destroy it, and that doesn't apply to a bias in Yerushalayim. Next, number five, the ein motzin ba zizin v'guzcheros, that with regard to the ksolim of the homes of Yerushalayim, we are not allowed to construct zizim. Zizim are those kind of verandas, you'll see it in Europe even today, very commonly, that stick out, they protrude into the public domain. Or guzcheros, which are larger areas called mirpasos, called porches. And all those have a propensity to extend tumah. We don't want to extend tumah in Yerushalayim, but this Bili Neder we'll see later on in the sugya. Then we have number 6, Ein Osin Ba Ashpatos. Again, to avoid expanding tumah in Yerushalayim, we don't make these heaping grounds for refuse. And those grounds will have to be established outside the boundaries of Yerushalayim. Vein Osin Ba Kivshonos, number 7, those gigantic fires or ovens that would add to the pollution of the air. Because what they did was they burned certain carbon in order to create sid, which is a kind of plaster from which they built homes, or a kind of blasts, you know, furnaces that were used to blast the clay in order to make pottery, which all this was so common back in the day. This has to be excluded from Yerushalayim. All these kivshonos, these furnaces that create air pollution and usha and make it so difficult to breathe, these have to be excluded from Yerushalayim. Then we have number 8. Ein osin ba ginos upardesos chutz miginos vradin. In other words, the ginos and pardesos, all sorts of types of gardens and orchards, gardens for vegetable gardens and fields for ilanos, all these attract a lot of bugs and so forth. They should be left outside of Yerushalayim. And the smells and odors from these pardesim are not beneficial to the air of Yerushalayim. But chutz, the exception of ginos vradim, and here today in Yerushalayim we have something called Ginat Vradim, which is a very famous place, the Vered, which is also called the flower called Kipas Hayarden. That was okay. It was called Kipas Hayarden because it used to grow on the banks of the Jordan River and apparently had a very special status and a beautiful odor, and that was something that could be grown in Yerushalayim, and there was no Easter that applied to it. Just reading a note from the Ezra Sakon, he says, "Havered haragil itzmach al sfas hayarden gidlu b'miuchad gidulo or gidlu b'miuchad Yerushalayim avur haktores." The mitzvah of haktores would make it urgent to have quick, easy access to the vered, and that's exactly why they allowed this vered to be grown in Yerushalayim. Then we have an additional comment here in the Brisa Shahayu. He's talking about Yerushalayim Shahayu Bimos Hanavim Harishonim. In other words, there was an ample amount of this vered back in the time of the early Nevi'im, which might be a reference to Shmuel HaNavi, perhaps to David HaMelech. And when they established that this area of Yerushalayim at the time of David would be designated exclusively for the building of the Beis HaMikdash, they made all these takanos, and they required to get rid of all these ginos and pardesim, with the exception of the ginos vradin that were needed for the ketores. Again, the halachos, the first halachos that we mentioned, reflect another concept entirely, especially the first four that we said with the oraisa, and they have to do with the fact that Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, it was the common owned property of all of the shvatim, of all of Klal Yisrael, and those dinim predate the Nevi'im Rishonim and have no shaykhas to the Mokum HaMikdash. They reflect the essence of Yerushalayim from the time of the Chalukah Sa'aretz, when Yoshua entered into the land. But these takonis that we're talking about now, for example, Ginos Upardesim, that has to reflect the time of the Beis HaMikdash, and it dates back to David HaMelech. And then we have number 9, V'ein Megadlin Ba Tarnagolim. We spoke about Tarnagolim a few days ago, that these roosters are problematic as far as moving Tuma around and pecking at the Isos that have to be used in Yerushalayim for purposes of Menachos, for purposes of Kodshim. And therefore we have to avoid these Tarnagolos at all costs in Yerushalayim. And again, what we're talking about is allowing these Tarnagolos to move around in the city. You want to lock them up in coops, in chicken coops. That's a whole different story. And we see that already at the time of Shlomo HaMelech, they used to feed Machilu Barboros, Avusim, Tarnagolim, and Futamim. And that we find already back in Tanakh and Melachim Aleph. V'chein muchach midivir Rav Shilo yumachav amid beis hayutarmim es hamizbeach be'ez kriyas ha-tarnagoles. So they certainly had roosters that were grown in Yerushalayim. Ve'melinim v'as ha-mes Yerushalayim a separate Isur of halonas ha-mes elekovrin oso miyad. In Yerushalayim they had to bury the dead immediately, and you get the impression from the Gemara that this is a special, unique halacha miyuchedes b'Yerushalayim, reflecting kedushas Yerushalayim yer hakodesh ein halonas hames b'Yerushalayim. And the Rishonim will ask from a Gemara in Sanhedrin, which establishes that any city, any place has an iser halonas hames, based on the pasuk Dvarim Chafalef lo solin nivlaso ala eski kava or tikberena. There's an immediate, urgent need for kvura. And that's derived from the pasuk Kavar Yikverena. That's an Isur Halonas HaMes. So the Shita Megubetza says that Bishar HaMakomos out of Yerushalayim Muta L'Holos HaMes L'Chavad HaMes. The Isur Halonas HaMes reflects the mitzvah of Kvura and Kavad HaMes. But if for the sake of Kavad HaMes we have to postpone the Kvura, we'll do so. Kideshis Asfu Rabim Lilavoso, so that the Levaya, there'll be more people. Ach b'Yerushalayim Osur L'Holin Af L'Chavad HaMes. Even for the sake of Kavad HaMes, there's a separate Isur in Yerushalayim of Halonas HaMes, above and beyond the general universal halacha of Kavad HaMes. And therefore, we will not postpone the burial of the dead. And the Chasdei David of Rav David Pardo says, Kevon She'isur Halonas. And the Chasdei David of Rav David Pardo, as we started before, says that the Isur of Halonas HaMes is derived from the pasuk he covered to Kerena Bayom Ahu, Mashma Shenoeg Rak Shemes Bayom Bekovro Biyom Acher. If he died on one day, you cannot bury him on another day. The lashon of the Gemara here indicates that Mes Balayla Yesh Lekovro Miyad Afilu Kodem Alos Hashachar Vezed Din Miyuchad VYerushalayim Achmas Kedushas Yerushalayim Asur LaHalot. We have an obligation to bury the dead immediately in Yerushalayim. At this point in the sugya, the Gemara goes back to the very top to go through all of these 10 dinim and explain them. The first 4 dinim are based on the fact that Yerushalayim lo nischalka l'shvatim, ein habayis cholut ba, there's no din of chaluta that after 12 months in an ir mukefes batechoma, there's no possibility of being goal. The Sada, the pasuk says, Ish ki yimkar beis moshav ir choma v'kama bayis asher b'ir al sher lo choma litzmitus lakone oso lidorosav lo yetze biyovel his kasava lo nischalka Yerushalayim lishvatim. Rabosai, we're going to stop for Mincha now, and Amir Tz Hashem, the second part of the Shia, we'll do later on today.